Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about the upcoming hearing by the US House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis. It's holding its first field hearing in Boulder this Thursday. We'll speak with Congressman Joe Neguse of Colorado's 2nd Congressional District. He serves on the committee, and he lobbied to have that first field hearing right here in Colorado. Then we'll hear about efforts in public parks in Longmont to improve soil health with a view to improving pollinator habitat. After the comment line, we'll go back to the BBC for the latest headlines, and then it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, slime, how algae created us, plague us, and just might save us. Shelley Schlender speaks with the author of that new book. At 9 o'clock, it is Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Sarah Dalgleish.
On Monday, Colorado health officials proposed increased regulations on oil and gas companies in the state that would strengthen existing controls. Among the proposed regulations were those that companies be required to inspect their facilities and fix leaks twice a year, and that they produce comprehensive annual reports detailing their levels of pollution. The Denver Post reports that John Putnam, the State Health Department's Environmental Programs Director, told those at a public meeting on Monday that the state aims to reduce emissions by 80% by 2030. He hopes the goal will be aided by new stricter control measures on oil and gas companies. The regulations would go into effect in 2020. They come in the midst of rising concern about air pollution levels in Colorado, which currently do not meet the federal limit for ozone levels. One contributor to the unhealthy ozone level is increased nitrogen oxide emitted in recent years from oil and gas production. The state now faces legally required stricter controls. Further public meetings on the proposed regulations are expected to be held in September. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission holds another hearing this Wednesday as it works on crafting new regulations to govern oil and gas in the state. The COGCC meets tomorrow from 9 to 11 in its Denver office. According to an annual compensation survey from the Employers Council, pay increases in the Denver and Boulder metro areas are expected to average 3.1%, the Denver Post reports. The increases are on track with inflation, but for those in Denver, this year's wage increases outpace rising house costs, which grew 2.4%. About 10% of Colorado employers plan to offer pay increases of 6.7% for jobs they consider critical to recruit. Colorado passed a bill earlier this year that will make it one of the first states to offer publicly backed health insurance. The plan would guarantee Colorado residents have comprehensive health insurance at a price similar or lower to current rates. But when the bill was drafted, its details were left blank. Colorado Insurance Commissioner Michael Conway and the head of the state's Medicaid Department, Kim Bimesteffer, are now faced with determining what those details will be. Last week, Conway held a public meeting in Keystone about what the public wanted to see from the new plan. The Colorado Sun reports that the plan faced backlash in a variety of differing views during the meeting. Lawmakers plan to hold more public meetings through August and draft recommendations by the end of September. There is no deadline for the implementation of the final plan, but backers say they hope it will be available by 2021. It's currently 63 degrees in Boulder. It should be partly cloudy today with a high of 92. For KGNU, I'm Sarah Dalgleish.
It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, the U.S. House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis will hold its first field hearing in Boulder this Thursday, August 1st. Congressman Joe Neguse, who represents Colorado's 2nd Congressional District, which includes Boulder, says he lobbied to have the first field hearing by the committee held in this area as it's an epicenter for climate research.
10 years ago, in 2007, when the Democrats first took the majority in the Congress, then Speaker Pelosi created a special committee, right? So a committee outside of the normal committee structure, a select committee that would address the climate crisis. It had a different name back then. It was chaired by a gentleman named Ed Markey, who was a congressman. He's now a United States Senator in Massachusetts. And that committee, over the course of 4 years, did work to try to develop comprehensive pieces of legislation that would help move the needle against in the fight against climate change. ultimately, what the committee came up with was the cap and trade legislation that you might be familiar with and some of your listeners might be familiar with that was approved by the U.S. House back in 2010. Unfortunately, it did not get passed in the Senate that year. After the Democrats lost the majority, the committee was eliminated by the Republicans. And so for the last 8 years, 9 years, we had virtually no hearings in Congress on climate change, and the committees of jurisdiction refused to take this fundamental issue up. So this year, when the Speaker, when the Democrats took control and the majority of the 116th Congress, Speaker Pelosi made the decision to essentially re-impanel, to create a new select committee. And this time it was termed the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis. And the goal of the committee is to spend the 116th Congress holding hearings, meeting with experts, taking testimony from leaders across the country with the idea and the ultimate goal of preparing a series of recommendations on legislative proposals that the Congress and the committees of jurisdiction could then enact to, as I said, fight the existential threat of climate change. And so there are 15 members of the committee. We requested to be on the committee, and I was grateful to have been appointed. So there are 9 Democrats, 6 Republicans. I'm the only Colorado lawmaker, the only lawmaker from the Rocky Mountain West to serve on the committee, which is important because it gives me the opportunity to educate my colleagues about the very real way that folks in Colorado and in the West are experiencing the consequences of climate change every day. Wildfires, droughts, any number of water related issues. And so suffice to say, it's a good opportunity, I think, for us and for our state to be able to make the case about why we need to take comprehensive action in the fight against climate change. So that's the committee. It's chaired by Kathy Castor, who's a congresswoman out of Florida, Tampa Bay.
Well, I know that when the news first came out that the first field hearing would be here in Boulder, I know you very much lobbied for that. Not only is the Rocky Mountain West impacted in very many ways, you mentioned drought, you know, forest fires, we've had countless other natural issues going on, but we're also a hub of research happening around climate. Now, a lot of that research is being suppressed. There was a very well-reported case of the scientists working in the Rocky Mountain National Park who's had her research suppressed. And so, given the current political climate, I mean, how do we elevate that research and science when we have the current political reality that continues to not just ignore that, but to actually enact policies that go against all of the research around climate?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The incident you actually just mentioned, it's been very underreported in the media. You all have done a good job of talking about it, but the incident of climate, of scientific censorship of a doctor, a scientist in the National Park Service who's actually has a relationship at CU Boulder, a contractor relationship. She just testified in front of the Natural Resources Committee that I serve on a few days ago. I had an opportunity to be able to question her and to share her story with the country, and appreciated her willingness to do that. We've also been very active in trying to hold the Department of Interior accountable, sent a letter to the Inspector General. I think the way that you elevate these issues is by doing exactly what we're doing this week, which was, and why we lobbied so hard, which is to bring the Select Committee to Boulder, Colorado, which is the epicenter of climate research in the United States. And, I made the case to the chairwoman and to the committee and to leadership that the very first field hearing that it should speak to the issues that we are ultimately going to be focused on. And so given that, what better place to pick than Boulder? We have NOAA, NIST, NCAR, UCAR, CERES, I mean, just hundreds, thousands of really brilliant research scientists here in this district, and I should say at NREL as well, which is in the 7th Congressional District. And so being able to have my Democratic and Republican colleagues come to Colorado to be able to tour those federal labs, to meet directly with those scientists so that they have an opportunity to share with us the cutting-edge research that they're doing, and also having an opportunity to do a field hearing, which will be a official congressional hearing, and to take testimony from local and state leaders here in Colorado. As you may know, I know as you know, and I suspect your listeners do as well, there are 8 cities across Colorado that have declared that they will go to 100% renewable energy by 2030. And several of those cities happen to be in my congressional district: Boulder, Fort Collins, Vail, Breckinridge. So from my vantage point, the ability to elevate their work to my colleagues so that hopefully we can emulate that at the federal level and take the successes that we're having here and make them a reality in Washington, that to me is the goal. So very excited about being able to welcome my fellow committee members to Colorado.
So what can people expect on Thursday? I mean, I know it's happening at CU, the Wolf Law Building.
Yes.
Is it open to the public? Who is going to be testifying? What can people expect?
Yes, so it will be open to the public. There'll be an overflow room as well, I believe. But also to the extent, you know, it's a work day and you know, it's from 9 to noon. So to the extent folks can't make it, and seating will be limited, although it is, as I said, open to the public, you can also see it online. It will be live streamed. And so folks can just go on to our website or to the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis website and be able to watch it. We will hear testimony from a number of different people. I don't know if the witness list has been made public just quite yet by the committee. So the committee will, I believe, be publishing that, I think, later today or tomorrow. But what I can say is you're going to be, I think, the witnesses will include a number of scientists here in our community, as well as government leaders, so people who have been fighting to get us to 100% renewable energy right here at home.
Now, you did say that the goal ultimately of the committee is to really consider legislation that can tackle this. And you mentioned the cap and trade that was essentially killed. On Wednesday morning, we're going to have some young people who are part of the Citizens Climate Lobby join us live on KGNU. And their big focus is pricing carbon. Mm-hmm. Taxing carbon, if you can use the T word that seems to be so apparent to so many people. You know, is that a piece of legislation that you see has some kind of traction right now in Congress?
I hope so. So I'm a co-sponsor of the bill that the folks that you're meeting with mentioned, and I believe it's gaining a lot of traction in the Congress. And there is a little, at least so far, some Republican support for the proposal. And so I think that, you know, I'm optimistic, but we'll have to wait and see. You know, from my vantage point, we've been very clear that I think we need to take large-scale, comprehensive action. As you know, I was one of the first lawmakers in the country to support the Green New Deal. Just recently joined on a resolution, was the first Colorado lawmaker to join a resolution to declare a climate emergency in the Congress. And so from my vantage point, I think those are the, when I think of terms of scope or scale, those are the kinds of bills that I think we're going to need to truly solve this problem. But that being said, I, of course, am supportive of any number of other measures that will get us closer, right, to where we need to go. And I think the bill that you just mentioned is an example of a bill that would move the needle. And so that's why we decided to support it.
And in terms of that needle, I mean, you said when this committee was first convened, what, 12 odd years ago, it was on climate change. The name change to the US Select Committee on Climate Crisis, I suppose, acknowledges the fact that, well, gosh, we've lost so much opportunity in those last 12 years, but really in the last 40, 50 years since scientists first started raising awareness about this issue. So many people are even now saying we're gone past the point where we can stop this runaway train. And right now it's really about mitigating the worst impacts. I mean, how do you feel as somebody from this district, but also as somebody who's, you have a new baby, right?
Yeah.
So how do you keep a sense of optimism, given that you are working in a political environment that is making it very hard to get any kind of traction on this type of legislation?
Yeah, it's both incredibly disheartening and frustrating, and yet, you know, inspiring at the same time. And by that, I mean, you know, the name change speaks to the gravity and the urgency of the situation, that we don't have another 15, 20 years to spare. We don't have another 10 years to spare. My daughter is, you know, she'll turn 1 year old, 1 years old in just a few weeks, and the world is going to look dramatically different when she is 10 years old. Dramatically different. And you know, you hear me pause for a second, because this is part and parcel to why I care about this issue so much, because ultimately it's about the world that she will inherit. And so while I am, you know, very frustrated at the fact that we have lost so much time because of the lack of any political will in the Congress to do anything about this problem, I also am inspired by the work being done by the scientists here in our district. I'm inspired by the activists who are calling for us to declare a climate emergency, the young people who you're meeting with tomorrow, so many others who are saying enough is enough. It's time that we act. And my hope is that, again, we can make forward progress. You know, I have to be hopeful that that's something that we can do. You know, when I first got elected, I very much wanted to serve on this committee. And my goal was to, you know, to be appointed to the committee and to bring the committee to Boulder for its very first field hearing. My staff and I gathered together and, you know, kind of came up with our goals for the first year. And that was near the top of the list. And to me, it underscores the reality that this is a number one priority, not just for me personally and for my office, but for this district and for the people who live here. And that's why we're fighting so hard.
Thank you so much, Congressman Joe Neguse.
Thank you for having me.
Well, as we heard, the speaker list has not yet been confirmed, but Congressman Neguse says he has invited mayors from communities in the 2nd Congressional District who have taken that pledge to transition to renewable energy by 2030. Now, the Republican members of the committee are expected to invite members of the oil and gas industry to testify. As we heard, that hearing is open to the public. It starts at 9 a.m., goes till noon at the Wolf Law Building on the CU Boulder campus. KGNU will be there. We'll have reports on Thursday. And we'll hear more from Congressman Joe Neguse next Monday morning at 8:35, speaking with KGNU's Frank Dabowski about some of the other work that he's doing in Congress. Now, the website for the U.S. Select Committee on the Climate Crisis, the House Select Committee, is climatecrisis.house.gov. It's 8:20. You're listening to KGNU. Well, back in 2017, the Longmont City Council adopted a resolution declaring the city to be a pollinator-friendly municipality. Prior to that, the city had ceased using neonicotinoid insecticides on public land. Well, now the city is looking at ways to improve soil health and turf health in public parks with a view to improving pollinator habitat. Jen Cornell has more.
I have with me today Sue Anderson and Joyce Kennedy from the People Pollinators Action Network in Boulder. Can you explain to us how grass seed is more important than fertilizer?
One of the major goals of having a strong, healthy turf is to have a really dense growth of the turf. Compost is probably the best way to build that biological matter. Aerating your soil can be important. And then you do an overseeding of grass. And over a period of time, when you build that dense turf, you're going to be pushing out the weeds.
PPAN, People and Pollinators Action Network, is working on several projects to not only help individuals, but mostly to help public entities to transition their practices to organic grass management.
We've been working with some experts that have that particular training. We're working with the city of Longmont on a particular pilot in three parks. And so they have received training on how to go through a three-year process to do that transition.
We're working with Beyond Pesticides at the national level, who've developed some in-depth expertise at transitioning landscapes from intensively chemically managed to more naturally managed. And then they have pilot projects all over the country in different kinds of ecosystems in different states to really demonstrate that they can successfully manage their turf in an organic manner. So here in Colorado, Longmont was chosen as one of the pilot sites to do that transition.
Ben Gretton is the park supervisor for horticultural maintenance with the City of Longmont Parks Department. We're in the Roosevelt Park. So Ben, can you please tell us a little bit about this park and the other parks in this project in Longmont?
We're here at Roosevelt. It's one of the historic parks in Old Town Longmont. It actually used to be the county fairgrounds, but now is a park used by the residents and others for events. There's a large grass area out in the middle, has an outdoor pool, a rose garden on the west end. So it's kind of a unique park. It has a little bit of everything. There's a park up north as part of this program as well called Garden Acres. It's more of a sports complex. Where they have softball, baseball, soccer, cricket. And so it's a little bit more of a specialized programming that goes on up there. Each of them are pretty old. The park up north is about 30 years old, and this one's even older.
So why this organic turf conversion was happening here?
So we decided that with public interest and then the way the industry is moving away from chemical and synthetic inputs into the turf maintenance, that we would, before we are forced into, doing this by council or public. We decided we would take the initiative and move into this program. The city of Boulder and I believe CU also are part of this program. And so the goal of this program is to eliminate man-made synthetic fertilizers that are all salt-based. So those actually hurt and hinder the microorganisms that are in that soil, which you want to help your turf health overall. And so the overall goal and focus is on soil health. And so if you have a happy soil, you have happy grass. Amen. If you have happy grass, you have no weeds or limited weeds, and you have a nice park, public area for people to use. And so by adding the organic fertilizers, you're actually stimulating and helping grow those microorganisms that actually benefit your grassroots, the plant health overall. Helps fight off diseases, drought tolerance, helps with the soil structure as well, and just overall plant health.
Does it help with the health of the pollinators also?
Yep. So we're going to, once we get a good handle on this, we've already planted 3 gardens this year for pollinators, and they are demonstration gardens as well as to add to the pollinator habitat. And so once we start getting a handle on our turf organic maintenance, we'll start focusing on pollinator areas and how we can organically manage that without spraying chemicals and that type of maintenance.
Can you tell me a little bit about the compaction issue and how it's how you're working with it here?
Yep. So Colorado is notorious for compacted soils because there's so much clay that's in our soil. So to alleviate a compaction, your best option is core aeration. And this is a task that's commonly done here in the state by homeowners and public entities. And so in really high-use areas, such as our park here or the athletic areas, we'll aerate as much as once a month. And this helps to alleviate all the athletic use or festivals that, you know, has many people walking on our grass area. For the homeowner, twice a year is more than enough. And so core aeration allows oxygen down into that root zone. So it helps to provide oxygen to the roots of your grass and other plants, as well as those microorganisms, and stops them from going into the anaerobic state. And so the plugs that you pull out will eventually break apart, and then they actually change how the soil structure is. So it's not just all clay. It actually pulls up clay and silt sand, all that's in there.
Nutrients.
And then it adds it, and then it redistributes that in the layer.
So what can the average homeowner do for their soil?
So if you're planning on trying to do this program at home, it's fairly easy. Start with a soil test. CSU has all that information online. And then you can buy organic fertilizers from Lowe's, Home Depot, Ace Hardware, other garden centers. And then I would recommend you aerate your yard at least once a year. Twice a year is best, springtime and then fall. And then follow that up with an overseeding of grass based on your yard requirements. And then importantly is if you have a large area of weeds in your yard, you can hand dig those out, add soil in, and then add your seed over it. And then what you'll see is that with proper water for the time of year, and then those organic and aeration, that your yard will actually be more drought tolerant. It'll grow darker color, grow more healthy throughout the year and be healthier overall.
That's Ben Grattan, who's the horticulture supervisor for the City of Longmont, speaking there with KGNU's Jen Cornell about ways to improve soil and turf health, primarily through aeration that can really help pollinators ultimately. And earlier in that report, we also heard from members of the PPAN, that's the People Pollinator Action Network. It is 8:29. You're listening to KGNU, and it's time now for the comment line.
This is Friday, 26th. July, and I was trying to listen to BBC at 5 o'clock. I don't know why you removed it from the air and have your party or whatever is going on. I regret. I'm sorry that you're putting news secondary. Thank you. This is Andrew Skamanich.
Recently, I attended a meeting at a local NGO where methods to get publicity were discussed. The attendees were asked to write down one idea. I wrote down KGNU. The woman at the whiteboard transcribed it as radio. I asked her to change it to KGNU and explained to her that KGNU is to radio what a perfectly grilled sirloin steak is to a cold hot dog. Robert Hastings.
And that is the comment line. The number to call is 303-447-9911. And we broadcast the comment line on Tuesday mornings. And you can have your opportunity to let us know what you think about what's going on here at KGNU. It is 8:30. We'll have science coming up after headlines from the BBC.